Monster Man, special episode, Building the Blank Men. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. Today's episode is a special episode brought to you by the generosity of my Patreon supporters, and specifically by the generosity of Patreon supporter Bob. This is a bit of an interesting one. Bob has asked me to talk about a creature from a game that he ran. Bob was one of the players in my long-running Dungeons & Dragons campaign, and is running the D&D game that I playing right now, but this is a monster from a Changeling the Lost game. Now, I did play in this game for a bit. This is a large game, a live-action game, and I did encounter these monsters a little bit, but mostly they're after my time. So I'm basing my knowledge of them on what I encountered of them in-game and what Bob has kind of told me from a behind-the-scenes perspective. I thought this would be an interesting way to take a look again at the monster design process, and in particular, look at how they apply in a more modern setting, but actually, these are monsters that I think could function almost equally well in a fantasy setting, since one of the things that is so interesting about the Blank Men is are the strategies that help make these monsters horrific and weird, even in a setting where magic and the supernatural are already very prevalent, where characters are predominantly magical. So if you would like to be like Bob and get your own special episode about a monster of your choosing, whether, as we can see, one from the D&D canon or one from whatever you like, all you gotta do is go to patreon.com/monsterman and you can subscribe at the $5 level. And in addition to the special episode, you'll also get access to my other podcast, Patron Deities. A new episode just went up on Tuesday, all about the gods of Celtic mythology. And you'll get the periodic bonus content that I put up for all my subscribers. And there should be a new episode of that up this week or early next week. All right, so let's talk about the Blank Men and who they are. Now, first off, I think in order to understand the monster, you have to understand the context of the game. This is a Changeling the Lost game, but it's a large live-action Changeling the Lost game divided into a number of more or less independent games, but that then meet regularly for kind of big events. So this is a world based in the modern day, but where the player characters are supernatural beings, right? So it's a bit like it's a Wayne Scott fantasy, or it's a bit like any other modern supernatural show. What that means is that characters are very much defined by their magical nature and their magical abilities, right? That's what sets them apart from ordinary people. So this is a setting where even though magic in the setting is quite rare, magic in the game is very commonplace. Even characters who you would think of as primarily, you know, fighters, or I played a character who was primarily a sort of detective and engineer, you achieve what you achieve through your magical power, so what being a changeling gives you. So this means that monsters that are themselves purely supernatural lack some of the threat that you might get in a more conventional modern horror game, right? So if you're playing Call of Cthulhu or something, the very fact that a monster is unnatural gives it some kind of threat, some kind of ontological shock, as it confronts player characters who are ultimately just ordinary people. It also means that it's hard to make a monster weird. You have characters who could be anything from, so I played a sort of like a Geppetto-like toy maker character, but you could have someone who, you know, was like a plant person, or, you know, or someone who had been like a doll, or someone who, you know, there's a whole variety of different types of magical characters that you can have based on what their experiences were like when they were abducted by the Fae. And so it's hard to make a monster weird in a way that's weirder than the player characters. Now, most Changeling the Lost monsters then go for the horror of familiarity. So most of your really serious opponents are people who in some way are just like you, but have not broken free from their inhuman masters. And so you have this sort of, either you really hate them because they have intentionally decided to sell out their own kind, or you feel a pity for them because, you know, there but for the grace of God go you. So most horror in Changeling the Lost is a horror of familiarity. But for this monster, Bob and his team, I don't know what the design process was like here, were looking for a monster that was weird. Now, although it's possible to have other mythologies, Bob tried to keep his campaign very narrowly focused on the imagery of traditional British folklore. So, you know, there are sly foxes and pretty princesses and a sword in the stone and all that kind of thing. So, against this background of supernatural characters, Bob introduced as antagonists the Blank Men. No one seems to quite know what their deal is. Everyone is terrified of them, but no one can 100% explain why. And over the course of the game, it became clear that what the Blank Men could do if they killed or defeated someone was that they would retroactively destroy them. So, not that that person had never been there, but that the Blank Men would, when they killed someone, somehow eliminate the memory of that person from the minds of everyone else. And so if you were killed by the Blank Men, it would be as though you had never existed. This is pretty horrific, but it also means that is quite difficult to implement in play because it's hard to turn to your player characters and tell them, now you forget everything about this person, including that they ever existed. That's quite hard to roleplay. But it is very horrific, right? It's much more horrific than being killed. It's maybe even more horrific than the other big threat of Changeling the Lost, which is that you're going to be captured and taken back to the Arcadia, the home of the Fae, to be essentially re-enslaved. The horror of captivity is a big part of that game, but here we have a kind of horror of nothingness. Now, physically, how the Blank Men appear is that they are tall, skinny, faceless humans dressed in ordinary clothes. And I thought that this was really interesting because Bob had been so focused in starting this Changeling game, so clear that he wanted to keep the folklore on which the game drew focused on traditional folklore. These monsters that come from basically internet folklore were more jarring as a result. Because obviously what I'm describing when I talk about a tall, skinny, faceless figure wearing ordinary clothes, wearing like a suit, I'm talking about the Slender Man. In case you missed Slender Man, although I don't know how you could have done it, this is a character that emerged in 2009 on the internet forum Something Awful, and it sort of quickly caught on. Is this a tall, thin, long-armed, long-limbed, blank-faced, human-like person? A bunch of stories, particularly in the sort of creepypasta genre, began to emerge involving the Slender Man. Have there been video games about the Slender Man? There have been films about the Slender Man, and notoriously, there was even an attempted murder allegedly inspired by the Slender Man. But what the Slender Man doesn't have, and I think that this is actually really important, is a coherent mythology behind him. There are a bunch of stories about Slender Man, and they have certain aesthetic elements in common. Slender Man tends to lurk in the woods, Slender Man tends to menace children and young people, and there's a sense that maybe he kidnaps people and takes them away. Sometimes Slender Man is portrayed as though he were kind of the avatar of some extra-dimensional Lovecraftian horror, but there isn't a one story of Slender Man. And that multivocal nature makes him a more powerful and useful symbol. This is also a case where the audience are well chosen. So the typical players of the game are people in their, you know, 20s, 30s, early 40s. They're people who, in general, are aware of this type of internet culture. For the most part, if you were to describe that figure to them, they would accept it as Slenderman, and furthermore, would think of it, I think would understand that it was already part of the cultural landscape. You know, these internet phenomena move so quickly that by the middle of the 2010s, I think Slenderman was already an accepted horror monster. But it bridges that line between kind of paranormal folklore and fiction, because a lot of the fiction that describes it is grounded in this kind of creepypasta internet realism, if I can use that term. Mechanically, apart from the thing about making you disappear, one of the things that the Blank Men are good at is that they're not vulnerable to the magic that changelings can deploy. And this is a bigger threat than it might seem, because like I said, in the world of Changeling the Lost, almost all characters are profoundly magical in some way. If you play a character who has minimized their magical capabilities in order to just work on, like, I don't know, being good with computers or being good at driving or being good in a fist fight, that's quite unusual, at least within the context of the game that we were playing. And some of these magical characters were extremely powerful. So the Blank Men presented a threat that was maybe even disproportionate to the other elements of the danger, because not only did they tactically nullify the PC's most important advantage, but they also sort of took away the thing that made the player characters unique. I don't think that was intended as a selling point, but I think it had that effect. I think this plays with something that in monster design is something you want to be very cautious about, People have called role-playing games power fantasies, and they've often done so in a way that is scornful, but the truth of the matter is that power fantasies are an important part of literature, heroic literature, whatever, right? Superman is a power fantasy, you know, She-Ra's a power fantasy, Harry Potter's a power fantasy, Sailor Moon's a power fantasy, whatever. All these things are power fantasies, and there's nothing wrong with that. So the fear of powerlessness is a great antidote to that kind of power fantasy, but you want to deploy it very cautiously. But because the Blank Men were already positioned within this game as weird outsiders, because aesthetically they were exceptions to the game's kind of fundamental rules, the fact that they affected characters in that way felt a little more legitimate because they were so weird already that it made sense that they worked outside of the norms of kind of magical interaction. So what we have here is a monster that relates to the key themes of the game. It's a monster that nullifies the player character's inherent magical advantages and threatens their sense of who they are on more than one level, because of course if it catches you, then it really threatens your sense of who you are, because your sense of who you are is not just something that's internal to you, but something that's reciprocal between you and all the people who know you. And if they don't know you anymore, then that's another type of horror. The game Unknown Armies identified as the what do they call the five stressors, right? These are the five things that frighten people: the unnatural, helplessness, violence, isolation, and uncomfortable realizations about the self. So the Blank Men don't necessarily tell you anything about yourself, maybe, we'll get to that in a second, but they do threaten all of these other four things. Now, I'm not saying that those are like, that that's some kind of profound psychological insight, but if you're trying to make a monster frightening, those five categories are sometimes a good way to think about it. They are things that frighten people. By using the aesthetic of Slender Man, I think the Blank Men effectively achieve their image is creepy. I think everyone finds Slender Man creepy. It's mysterious because its origins are so weird and obscure, and it's multivocal. It doesn't have one obvious meaning. So other folkloric creatures of the modern day, like the Chupacabra, is fun to say, and it's a fun idea, but there's nothing to the Chupacabra. It's just a creature that preys on livestock. It's basically a kind of low-rent, wild vampire. So it's an image that everyone recognizes, and it's a fun image, but it doesn't have more than one meaning, not really. That's why Slenderman is a stronger contender for adaptation into a monster than the Chupacabra. The other thing that the Blank Men do, and I think the trickiest to pull off, is their element as they relate to time and memory. So, Bob has explained to me, and I don't know that I could explain accurately, the complicated metaphysics of the Blank Men. Why it is that they seem to appear and disappear apparently at random, why killing them never seems to make a dent in their numbers, and why they're able to remove people essentially from this reality, from this timeline. What this does is that it provides a hook for the monster that can be approached in a different way. So within the world of Changeling the Lost, there's lots of different ways to wind up in other spaces. The alternate dimension called the Hedge, there are weird little spaces called Hollows, there are lots of other places that you might wind up that where the rules of time that the Blank Men can affect might not work the same way. So you might find in any of those areas, or inside some kind of magical ward or something like that, you might find preserved evidence of someone who had been disappeared by the Blank Men. Here, of course, we see the symbolism of the blank face as it relates to the blank spot in the character's history. And so that's a really fun intro for the player characters. You know, oh, here's a photograph of me, and who's this other person with me, and why are we dressed like it's a wedding? This particularly works because the theme of loss and being separated from your life is such an important one in Changeling the Lost, but I think it works in any other kind of gaming context. You can certainly see it in a fantasy game, particularly if you had the kind of mercenary, orphan, wandering character that is so common in a Dungeons & Dragons game, a person without roots, without friends or family. What if that was not merely a narrative convenience, but actually that there had been something there that had been lost? I think the idea of being forgotten is frightening, and I think the idea of forgetting is frightening. We don't like to think that we might forget the people who are important to us or the things that are important to us. That's a part of who we are. So to forget those things means forgetting who we are. If you find evidence that something happened to you that you don't remember at all, that's a great mystery prompt, particularly when, as you're going to get in a large game, later on you mention this to someone and they go, "Huh, you know, I heard that that also happened to so-and-so. Now, any kind of weird monster like this suffers a certain amount of degradation over the long term. Initially, when the blank men appear, everyone thinks, oh my goodness, who are these guys? Rumors have begun to spread of the mysterious blank men. Oh no, I saw one of the blank men. You know, quick, jump out the window and run away. And then, you know, there's a fight with the blank men and somebody wins. And you're like, whew, that person barely escaped with their life. You know, this town's been taken over by the blank men. Run, run. But gradually, you begin to learn their weaknesses. You begin to identify ways that you can fight them. And then you start to think about them tactically. They only present a tactical challenge. Their existence isn't shocking anymore once you know the rules behind it, even though the disappearing people thing is still horrifying. This happens with any monster. You can see it with the Borg in Star Trek, for example. That can be good or bad. The worst example of that is the Turrican in Buffy the Vampire Slayer, where in the last season of the show, these new type of vampires were set, or very old type of vampires, were set up as being this ultimate threat. And there was a long build-up to the challenge where Buffy finally managed to defeat one of them. But by the end of the series, she and her team were able to just mow through hordes of them. And the gap between the finally able to beat one of them and the mow through hordes of them was too short. You know, there wasn't a period where she kind of reliably learned to fight them. It just, the pacing was a bit off. Now, Dungeons & Dragons has traditionally dealt with this by either escalating or varying. So, for example, your player characters are bored fighting trolls. Well, now there are spirit trolls. Your player characters are bored fighting fire giants, well, now they're a fire giant dreadnoughts. Your player characters are bored, etc., etc., right? And this, to my understanding, is how Bob also handled the blank men in Changeling the Lost. Now, this works not too badly because this is not intended to be an open-ended game. From the beginning of the time that we played this game, we knew that there was a certain time when it was going to end, that it would ultimately have a climax, even though that climax was years down the line. So you don't have that problem where when you introduce a new type of monster, you've got to constantly iterate on it to keep it fresh for the players, and it's basically going to go on forever until there are an infinite number of types of magic wolf and everyone's bored to tears of all of them. Here, if you're sensible, you can pace out your escalation toward the climax. And that means introducing things like, you know, newer, tougher versions of blank men. As the blank men began to get pushback from the player characters, they ultimately evolved into newer, more powerful forms, and word began to spread that there was the blank king, a mysterious, even more powerful version of the blank men who was directing them. And in fact, since killing blank men seemed to do nothing to them, they would just sort of come back and have another go at another time, presumably solving the mystery and defeating the blank king becomes the next step. I was out of the game by this point, so I'm not really sure, but I assume that that's what's happening. So that's a pretty good example of effective monster escalation in my view, right? You start with an ordinary monster, everybody is frightened of it because of the threat it poses. Now we've learned to deal with the monster, we've figured out what hurts it, we've figured out how to beat it, and we can mostly keep ourselves safe from it. But it still keeps turning up and we're going to lose people every so often unless we can stop its threat. I'm reminded of the 5th edition scenario of the Chapel on the Cliffs, which features a town that's overrun by undead, and probably the first night that the player characters are in the village, they're going to spend a lot of time bashing skeletons, only to see all the skeletons fall into lifeless piles of bone come sunup, and then reanimate at nightfall, regardless of how bashed they were before. So the first time you have this encounter that you barely escape, then you manage to defeat all the skeletons, and you think, ah, well, job well done, and then you realize, oh no, wait, actually, now my ability to defeat all the skeletons is the new normal. But I still need to solve the problem, and defeating all the skeletons doesn't solve the problem. Now, this is how you can tell that these are monsters created for a specific storyline, but good monster design can often include that kind of escalation, that kind of, I don't want to say narrative, but that kind of scenario structure within them. Once you have learned to fend off the blank man, you'll want to solve the problem of the blank man, and the only way to solve the problem of the blank man is to probe the mystery of their origin and find out a way to defeat them once and for all. That also means that in a game like Changeling, which is not as kind of adventuring focused as something like D&D, you get an opportunity for all the different characters with their different skill sets, whether those are researchers or occultists or investigators or people who talk to others or what have you, they all get a chance to do some aspect of this thing, which is an important factor in designing a monster, or at least in designing a scenario. So ultimately, I think that the blank men are a good example of how to fit horror elements into a game that actually sometimes struggles with them. And they're a good example of how to use the aesthetics of a certain type of modern culture to create a monster. That is to say, to look for aesthetic elements that can be repurposed in a vague way. It's not like you've decided to adapt, I don't know, the Chitauri, the aliens from the first Avengers movie, right? Those guys do have a clear and recognizable aesthetic, but that doesn't lead anywhere because that aesthetic is not multivocal. The only thing they got going for them is alien invaders. But here, by looking at a set of stories and images that have kind of blurry edges, you can use this image in a way that is evocative, but that doesn't tie you down to any one understanding of what it is that the monster can or can't do in your game. And that idea, the enigma, the blank, then ties in thematically to what it is that the monster does. And I don't even know that that was an intentional choice, but when those things work together, it helps make a monster memorable in a way that, you know, if they looked the same way but they shot lightning, it wouldn't. So that's my take on the blank man. Bob, I hope that that was a good assessment of what you were trying to achieve and how you achieved it. Everyone else, I hope the example of the blank man gives some suggestions in terms of how one designs monsters. I'd be super interested in hearing how you have taken inspiration from modern culture to create monsters in games. This is more of a kind of Call of Cthulhu-y occult investigative question than a dungeon one, but I think that there's probably ways to do it for a more traditional fantasy game. The creatures that I described could fit well into a D&D game, even if they wouldn't necessarily make sense in a dungeon per se. Like I said earlier, if you would like me to talk about a monster of your choice, all you gotta do is go to patreon.com/monsterman and pledge at the $5 level. In our next episode, we'll be returning to our journey through the P and Q chapter of Monster Manual 2, the 1983 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition. So please join me then for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.